Welcome to Modern Sign Books. If you're interested in what makes your favorite authors tick, then you'll love hearing what they have to say in our interviews. Learn how they got started writing, the books and authors that inspired them, and much more. Meet today's hottest authors as they discuss their lives and writing with art book specialist, Roger Nichols. And don't forget to pick up a copy of your favorite books at bjbooks.com. Here's Roger.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. Our guest this morning has recently performed the literary equivalent of stepping up to bat for the very first time in the major leagues in the bottom of the ninth, Game 7 of the World Series, and hitting a Grand Slam home run. A.J. Finn's debut novel, The Woman in the Window, is, to quote the press sheet, the most widely acquired debut novel ever, and the ever is in all caps. It's already been sold to 38 territories around the world. Fox 2000 Studios acquired it for a major motion picture with Oscar winner Scott Rudin and Pulitzer playwright Tracy Letts. It's also being compared to Gone Girl, etc., etc. Stephen King calls it unputdownable. Gillian Flynn calls it a noir for the new millennium. We are delighted to welcome A.J. Flynn. Good morning.
Thanks so much for having me here, Roger.
What a delight. Now, you have a background as a book editor, but you told one reviewer you used the nom de plume A.J. Finn because it would be very embarrassing if you put the book out and nobody picked it up.
That's totally correct. I spent 10 years in the publishing industry, only leaving at the end of 2017 to become a full-time writer. And when we submitted the book 2 years ago to publishers, I was wary of putting my finger on the scale, as it were. I didn't want any editor to acquire or more likely not acquire the book because they knew me. So I went the pseudonymous route and always intended to publish the book pseudonymously if, in fact, I found myself lucky enough to have a publisher, not least because I thought it would be disconcerting for the authors whom I published to wander into a bookshop and see their editor's name writ large across a hardback. So that's why I settled on a pseudonym, and here we are.
Right, and now you have a dual identity, just like Batman.
I often liken myself to Batman, but no one has ever independently corroborated it. Yeah, it's as someone who's quite private, I find it, and this sounds precious, even pretentious, but I find it helpful to have a pseudonym. It organizes me psychologically. As A.J. Finn, I can say things and speak to things that I wouldn't feel comfortable discussing under my real name, unlikely as that sounds.
No, I totally agree, because in my professional life as an interviewer, as a news reporter, I can call up anybody in private and talk with them about anything. And in private life, I'm not nearly so secure. So it's a kind of a mask we wear to face the world.
Oh, good. You can relate. Yep. Yeah. Yep. That, you've nailed it.
All right. The book, wow. It's a Disneyland for noir fans, full of homage to the classics and the obscure, with a setup that's, I have to say, this purely delicious setup in here. You've got the protagonist, Dr. Anna Fox, a child psychologist who, following a horrific event, has developed extreme agoraphobia. She can't leave her New York house without getting a panic attack, so she develops this obsession on watching her neighbors through her windows, and one day she spots a new neighbor getting stabbed to death. Or does she? And that is the central fun of this whole setup. Obviously you're a noir fan.
I am indeed a fan of both noir and Hitchcock, and I do draw a distinction between the two. Noir, film noir, is saturated with doom. You know, entering into a noir world, that this is unlikely to end well for anyone, or at least for the protagonist. Hitchcock is distinguished, I think, by a sort of underlying sunniness, or at least wit. And it's almost a shame that his two best-known films, both masterpieces, Psycho and Vertigo, are in some ways his least representative, in that they are absolutely humorless. They are pretty grim. Whereas if you look outside those two at anything from North by Northwest to Shadow of a Doubt to Strangers on a Train, they're more upbeat. And in writing The Woman in the Window, I tried to skew a bit more towards Hitchcock than towards classic noir, although certainly the book shares DNA with both.
Yeah. And you mentioned, obviously, and Anna is a noir fan, and she has this huge library. And I lost count somewhere north of 40-something titles that you reference in there, which is just really a sweet, people love that kind of thing. And I have to say, Matt, that was very nice stuff.
Good. I'm pleased. And if readers take away recommendations having read this book, then I'm that much more pleased for them.
I have to ask, though, do you have a favorite, the one you come back to again and again?
That's tough. If you asked me yesterday, I would have come up with a different answer. If you ask me tomorrow, same response. Today, I'm very fond of Shadow of a Doubt, which was Hitchcock's own favorite amongst his films. I actually cribbed the epigraph for The Woman in the Window from Thornton Wilder's screenplay. It's a noir-ish film set in sunny California, in which Teresa Wright plays a young woman who's got a crush on her Uncle Charlie, played by Joseph Cotten, until Uncle Charlie visits one day and she realizes he might not be what he seems.
Yeah, and that's kind of a characteristic of all really good adventure, action, novel, mysteries, is that people are not always what they seem, and events are not always what they seem. You just mentioned Hitchcock. I have to remember that I just bounced across one time a line where he says that Murder by the Babbling Brook is more startling than that in the dark and stormy night.
I love that. That's absolutely perfect. Yes, I should stress that The Woman in the Window is not a serial killer thriller. It is not saturated in gore or graphic content. There are surprises, and I hope some of them shock readers or at least take them aback. But I quite like what you've just said about A Babbling Brook. That's the sort of setting I've tried to evoke in this novel.
Spider Robinson, the science fiction author, talks about antinomy, the tension between two beliefs or conclusions that are in themselves reasonable, and in this case, mutually opposite. It's like contradictory. His classic describes a boy and a girl who grew up together, plan on being married, and she suddenly decides to become a nun. And he, as a good Catholic, can't even complain about that. That's that tension. And here you have it in terms of her agoraphobia and something she sees. She feels like she has to go out, but she can't, but she has to, etc. It's really, really stunning stuff.
Oh, good. I'm very pleased you feel that way. It was in many ways not a fun novel to write, because this character has been aggrieved by some incident in her past, and we don't learn the details of that incident until about 2/3 of the way through the book.
Yeah.
That said, I did enjoy spending time with her, and it's increasingly plausible in the 21st century that someone not afflicted by agoraphobia, although our heroine certainly is afflicted by it, could spend much of their life indoors. Everything is delivered to us these days. We stream our entertainment. We buy our groceries in bulk through couriers. Amazon has made it very easy not to set foot outside.
Yeah, and in this book, in The Woman in the Window, that Anna is conversing with people in a help group of people who are agoraphobics, trying to help the newbies, as she calls them. So there's lots of layers to this, and that makes it just really delicious, as I say. I understand that you have a particular ability to empathize with Anna.
I do. I struggled with severe depression since age 21. I'm 38 now, and it wasn't until I was 36 that my diagnosis was adjusted, and I was put on new medication, and that proved really restorative. Not altogether transformative, but it significantly improved me. And for days, weeks, sometimes months at a stretch during those 15 years, I found it very difficult, if not outright impossible, to prise myself from bed, let alone leave the house. So not only did this endow me with a general empathy towards my fellow man, but it helped me connect with this character, to understand her frustration, to bond with her over her boredom. Because when you are stuck, marooned inside, you crave stimulation. And that's why Anna turns to so many activities. That's why she watches old films. That's why she counsels fellow agoraphobes online. That's why she spies on her neighbors, which, of course, catalyzes the action.
Right. And I want to compliment on the title, because it's nice to see the word woman instead of girl used,
right?
Because it's been so overused lately.
Oh, tell me about it. And quite apart from the serious issue of its overuse, I find it really reductive and infantilizing. If you're 18 years of age or older and you're a female, you are legally, and in most cases biologically, a woman. And that's a great thing to be. You're a grown-up. Good. Well done. I think it would be really creepy if men in books were described in the titles as boys. That would be off-putting. We should have the same response to women being described as girls.
This is Anna's a strong character with a lot of weaknesses at the same time. Again, there's another tension you have here in that she's self-medicating both with psychoactive drugs she's been prescribed, but with copious quantities of Merlot as well, which leads some problems when the police come.
Yes, and her substance abuse, such as it is, serves a dual role. On the one hand, it's a narrative device, and a pretty frequent one in suspense storytelling. We need to call the narrator into question, not only to provoke a reaction from the supporting cast, but to ensure that the reader stays on her toes. Beyond that, though, I'm trying to think of how best to describe this.
You have to be careful in this. Anna. Yeah, yeah.
Her substance abuse seems to me a natural response to her experience, both past and present. It seems to me credible, totally plausible, that she would turn to drugs and alcohol as she does.
It is, actually. And what intrigues me is this is almost two books. And I say that because the first 100 and some pages is this beautiful setup with her character coming really fully developed into this. And then suddenly the vision of the incident across the way, if it really is, sets up the second book, which is like a whole different situation. And I found that fascinating too.
Well, I'm glad you responded that way. The first third or quarter of the book is quite deliberately paced. And this was by design. I wanted to adjust the reader, to acclimate her to the rhythms and sensations and experiences of an agoraphobe's life, which isn't always terrifically exciting. And then the narrative disrupts that life, disrupts that routine, and the plot kicks into high gear. So again, that was by design.
Ah, cool. Well, I suspected that because of the, I have to say, fairly masterful for a debut novel. My goodness, of course, being an editor, you knew a lot of the pitfalls.
I was aware of the tricks and tropes going in. I published plenty of novels in this genre, and I read constantly in this genre. So I paid strict attention to authors whom I admire, not merely for their storytelling, but for their prose style. I wanted to craft memorable sentences. I wanted the reader to be able to appreciate this book both as a thriller and as a novel, as a work of, dare I say it, literary fiction. I'm not saying that I've succeeded, but I set out to do that.
And I was going to say that it was literary in the best sense of the word, because sometimes literary to me means precocious, pretentious, and overbearing, and this is anything but that. This is suck you right in kind of stuff.
Oh, good. I tried to wear it lightly, so I'm pleased to hear that. Thank you.
And I want to say up front and acknowledge totally that you nailed me with huge surprises that made me go, what?
Oh, good.
So congratulations on that.
Good. I love pulling the rug out from under someone's feet. So thanks for saying so.
Yeah. The first major one, and I obviously can't describe it, but I love things that make you reexamine everything you've had read or seen up to that point and go, oh, new insight, new understanding. And that really was hammer.
Sort of usual suspect style. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, exactly. That was it. That's another classic, too. Who do you read for fun?
I read a lot of Gillian Flynn, Kate Atkinson, Tana French, Carl Hyacin. I read a lot of dead authors. I think that's down to my experience in publishing. I would escape from my living authors and commune with those without a pulse anymore. Graham Greene, Evelyn Waugh, Wilkie Collins, Henry James. I read pretty broadly, actually. I'm big into maritime nonfiction.
Interesting. Yeah. So
most whatever I can get my hands on.
And you have to be, let's face it, you have to be really tickled by the response to this. I was looking at, it went on sale January 2nd, and for this week, for the second week in a row, it's the number one seller on Amazon. That's got to be wow.
It was surprising. In our first week, we hit number one on the New York Times spot, and this is only the third time a debut novel has managed that, and the first time since 2006, I believe. And the response has been completely overwhelming. I'm beyond grateful for it. I'm still absorbing it, and I don't mean to sound, too precious about it. It's not as though I've won a Nobel Prize. But it's so far beyond anything I could have expected or hoped for. I was honestly just hoping to write a book. I did not have ambitions beyond that. So to have scaled these summits is testament to my excellent publishers in America and around the world, and to my hardworking agents. And I'm, again, impossibly grateful to them.
Right. Well, obviously, you may have had a little bit easier time getting an agent than some of us that are starting out and trying to do that. But it worked out pretty well for them.
That was the one leg up. I did have access to agents. Although, to be fair, I don't think an agent would accept material if she or he did not feel that she or he could place it.
Yeah.
So, you know, whilst I did have I was able to knock on the door of my agent, I'd like to think that the manuscript stood on its own two legs, but, you know, that's just what I'm telling myself.
Oh, I think you have no problem in that regard, given the reaction to the people and the number of countries and territories that are sucked it right up before publication.
Yes, it's really exciting.
Now, sophomore syndrome. You have your whole life to write the first one. You better have the second one waiting on. Are you working on that at the moment?
I am. I'm halfway through. It's another psychological thriller, this time set in San Francisco. And I will say that I came up with the idea for this book before we submitted The Woman in the Window to publishers. So I do feel that much more confident in it. I liked it before there was pressure to come up with something. So I feel safe on that score. That said, we can talk when book number three is in the works, and I'll let you know if I'm freaking out.
Okay. Now, I know that we have to let you go because you're scheduling a whole bunch of interviews today, but I just want to compliment you on wonderful entertainment and the willingness to spend time with us today to talk about it. Obviously, you're a fun person to be with, and I suspect that we would enjoy a beer together sometime.
Absolutely, and sign me up. And thank you for making time for me today.
Oh, it's our guest this morning, A.J. Finn, and the novel is The Woman in the Window. It is superb. And if this sounds like a fascinating book to you, you can find an autographed copy of it at VJ Books. Thanks so much for spending time with us today.
Thanks, Roger.
Thank you for listening to Modern Sign Books. Make sure to follow and comment on who you would like to hear next. Feel free to check out our other author interviews. And visit vjbooks.com to pick up signed copies of all of your favorite books.